Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
How's it going?
It's another day, another podcast.
Excellent. Another Not a Thing podcast. Brought to you by us guys.
Us.
Yeah.
It's all us. We're the brains and the coin behind this operation.
Right. We don't wanna, we'll not bow to any sponsor. Although
Until one
if
offers their services, and then we will bow, we will kneel. We will do whatever it takes.
Yeah, we'll get that genuflect. We'll practice, we'll get it just right. But in all seriousness, one of the things we're looking for, and we mentioned this last week on the podcast, is we are looking for a logo for Not a Thing Podcast. Currently, our logo, if you download any of the podcasts and look at your phone or iPod or computer screen or whatever device you're using to play it back, you'll see a nice big font saying "Not a Thing," which I think looks cool, but could be a really cool logo also. So I hope
Need something a little more t-shirt worthy.
exactly. For
Gotta
all
get
our
that
live
merch.
shows that we can sell the swag at, we'll our upcoming set of live shows.
We just should start walking into parks, just start walking up to people and talking. And like, yeah, no, it's a live show. Enjoy, it's free. We're not crazy at all.
No. Well, at least we're not according to that one test,
Right.
right? Which
Dodged a bullet there.
which we will talk about in just a moment. We do have a little business to take care of. Last week's episode was really fun. We kind of did a year in review ish of things we liked. I mean, the podcast has not been around for a year yet, but we talked about it like it had.
A
But
year that we remembered.
right. So we forgot one category, and that was books that we liked from last year.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and my cat is apparently freaking out. I don't know if you could hear that.
Yeah, I can.
Okay, well, she's okay now. But so what books or book or whatever did you like from last year?
Well, I think I only read two that had actually come out last year. The first one that I got from your family was Red Shirts, the Star Trek semi-based book.
Written by John Scalzi.
Yes.
I also read that book actually. That was one that I don't remember where I saw the first mention of it. I think it was on NPR, but it was it's a really fun book. It pokes fun at kind of the science fiction genre in an interesting way. I mean, not in a Galaxy Quest way, which I really enjoyed. But
Yeah,
this
good
is
movie.
an interesting take on sci-fis and narratives and kind of the way those things kind of play out. It's really well done, and it's a quick read. I blew through it on a plane ride over the course of like 3 hours, much quicker than I ever expected to read it, actually.
Yeah, I read it in one night, but I did stay up till like 3 in the morning to
Yeah.
finish it.
Well, it's a really good book, and I think it's a good testament to writing, just kind of as an art, because the way that the book is laid out is there's the book itself, and then there's kind of an afterword,
The three codas.
right, exactly, and they tack on three almost short stories in their own right that are in that universe. And it's really nice how much the universe was like already fleshed out, that they could do kind of three extra little stories that work really well in the book. So I like that for sure. And plus it was fun to see kind of a Star Trek-y style experience, because there is that. In fact, it does reference Star Trek directly during part of the book. It's good.
Yeah.
I also read a book called let's see, it was called A Drive into the Gap, and it's by Kevin Guilfoyle. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but he's connected to the group of folks that make the Field Notes notebooks. And Field Notes notebooks are similar to Moleskines, if you know that kind of line of notebooks, but they're all made in the U.S. And they're made out of a company in, I want to say, Chicago. But anyway, the book is a baseball memorabilia kind of journey. So the author is writing about stories that were told to him by his father, who's apparently big into baseball memorabilia. And what's interesting is his father has is experiencing kind of memory loss as his life is progressing, and so it's a really interesting kind of book, because it's kind of like art history mystery coupled with the, you know, and kind of peppered with stuff, because the memories of it are patchy, and so it's used in a really interesting way to make the kind of the drama stretch out a little bit. And it's also kind of a weird book, because they included it with kind of, if you bought a set of their notebooks that month or whatever, you got a copy of the book, which is like a 70-page book. It's the kind of thing that you're supposed to read, like, you know, over, like, I mean, you could probably read it. Yeah, I mean, you could probably read it, like, you know, very, very quickly, like between innings at a baseball game kind of a thing. It's a super short read, but really thoughtful and well done and extremely heartfelt. I mean, for someone that likes baseball but maybe doesn't like it so much to get into every little stat, it was actually really fascinating. So that was a fun book for me.
Only 70 pages.
Yeah.
And that sounds more substantial than the other book I was going to recommend.
Oh, what was that?
Well, I mean, not in page count, but in, you know, depth of bookness.
Mm-hmm.
The other book from 2012 that I really enjoyed was Cold Days.
Oh.
By Jim Butcher.
Okay.
It's the 14th book in the Dresden Files.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, you know, don't start reading there. Start book one, Stormfront, by Jim Butcher. It's the story, Harry Dresden is a wizard private detective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like if Harry Potter, his name's Harry Dresden. So it's like if Harry Potter was, you know, a guy from Chicago who liked to fight vampires and crazy otherworldly whimsical beings. It's very violent. It is not a children's book at all, but they are just fun. Fun detective mysteries.
Cool. Yeah, that
with
sounds...
a supernatural twist.
That does sound fun, actually. I think I have a very short list of books to kind of push through this year, and I should pepper it with a little more fiction. I've been kind of amassing nonfiction recently, and I have to balance it a little bit. So that might work. That might work really well.
Yeah, if you're looking for some major escapism, go for the Dresden Files.
I was going to read Nate Silver's book, which is pretty much not escapism. That's just
no
straight up facts and figures, ma'am. No, no play
just
in
facts.
That. Excellent. Cool. Well, I think reading a thing, definitely.
Yes, definitely.
Do so.
When you're not listening to podcasts, and I'm not podcasts, podcast, our podcast.
Yes.
When you're not doing that, you should probably read stuff. That's important.
Do you, are you a physical media guy, or do you get most of your reading materials digitally?
At this point, I don't purchase physical anymore.
Oh.
Since I got my Kindle, yeah, it's so easy.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to the bookstore. I literally could be sitting in bed and hit buy, and 5 seconds later, I'm reading the book. For the same price I would have gotten from going to the bookstore and getting the book.
That is pretty wild. I'm still, I guess I'm still kind of old school on that. I mean, I bought Red Shirts in hardcover actually. So it's even like more of an investment, I guess, because.
Well, you know, that might be a smarter investment because I am on my second Kindle since I stepped on my first one.
Oh no!
And then I couldn't read any of them. It's dead.
No, but you can. All of those are available, like, digitally, right? It's still your account, so like you can.
Yeah, no, I was able to download it in my new Kindle.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I step on a hardcover book, I can still read it the next day. And it doesn't cost me $100.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think there's an opportunity cost in there because of the convenience, but...
It's a convenience fee for my clumsiness.
Cool. I like the idea of the Kindle. I think... I probably will just break down and get one eventually. I mean, I don't like waiting for books in paperback if it's a really good book. And the library system nearby is good, but I've noticed that it doesn't always carry the stuff I want to read. So I don't know if I just like really obscure stuff or what, but...
That's the magic of the library. It's all thousands of books that nobody wants to read. There's a couple that you do and they're always checked out.
Yeah. The thing that I don't get is that they have digital copies of books and you can check them out, but they can also be unavailable if someone has checked enough of the copies out.
What?
Which I don't understand, because if it's digital, what is stopping anyone from reading all of them? I just don't get it. I mean, I understand that they want you to give it back, because that's how libraries kind of work. But
do you have to walk in and delete it in front of the librarian, or what?
I think the copy expires is how it works. So the reader prevents you from reading it. It's not like you can't use it with a Kindle. Maybe that's not true. Maybe some of them you can. But I remember seeing a thing where you had to download a reader and you could read it on that. But then after the expiration date of the checkout, if you haven't checked it back in, you can no longer open the file.
Wait, like a reader for a computer or a tablet?
For a computer, I think.
See, I would not want to do that because I stare at a computer screen all day at work. And that is not as comfortable as reading ink on a page.
Oh, yeah.
That is the advantage of the Kindle, is the e-ink.
Yeah. That's the main reason that I would do it. Because I remember enjoying e-books for a while. I mean, I think one of... What did I read as an e-book? I read World War Z as an e-book. And that was excellent, but I had to purchase it. Like, as much as I loved it, I knew I wanted to reread it, and I had to purchase it in paperback because I didn't like reading it on a screen. This was pre-Kindle, and that's a great book, by the way. I think the movie is probably not going to be as good, or no. It will be good. It might be good, but it's definitely its own movie. It's not. It's
not
related,
the book.
Yeah, it's related to the book only in name. So that's kind of a thing, I think. I don't know. So, the book is good, and the audiobook is really, really good if you get a chance to listen to that. Not a 2012 thing, but, you know.
Yeah, Strange, I will listen to podcasts all day long, but I don't go for audiobooks.
Yeah, I think... If there were more podcasts when I was commuting, like 80 minutes each way, I would probably have been a podcast person too. But I'd picked up a lot of audiobooks for that. Like I worked at a company in Newark, which is just north of Fremont. And that commute was easily 70 to 90 minutes every day.
That's brutal.
And it was just awful. And I burned through quite a lot of books through that. It was good. But yeah, I think I would have been a podcast person if they were around during that. I think that I only like audiobooks when they're read by the authors, especially for anything autobiographical, obviously. But that being said, I think the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, that whole series of books, for whatever reason, the guy that reads those was great. And obviously that's not the author, because the author is Swedish dead. And dead. But the guy that they got to read those was really good. So I enjoyed that. A few audiobooks that I really liked, they were written by, I can't remember her name. It's going away. I'll have to look it up. She wrote Stiff, which was about like cadavers and how they're kind of used in all sorts of things, like medical research and crash test dummies and all sorts of stuff. Kind of.
Oh, didn't she write the book about going to space?
Yes. Postcard.
Mary Roach.
Yes, Mary Roach. Excellent. Well done, Brendan. This is why it's a team show. Thanks very much. But yeah,
I cheated. I used the internet. Full disclosure.
But yeah, it's a her books are great, and I think that she reads all of hers. So she did. I think I've read.
Packing for Mars. That was the other
Packing for Mars. Almost every book that she's done. She also did another book about these things are all on the internet. I will I'll link to them in the show notes. Mary Roach. Done. Thanks, Bren.
She was on Nerdist.
Yeah.
That's where I think I heard about her.
Okay.
I think. Or no, she wasn't on. It was I think it was like Jerry Ryan was on, and she was talking about that book.
Oh, okay.
That's weird.
Fun.
Ah, memory.
Yes.
So, not so linear.
But along with books in... I know that comic books, I pretty much exclusively buy physical media. I know that DC and actually everybody is now pushing them out through iOS apps, and they're probably Android apps too, but I think that's good. I mean, I think the format is right to read comic books in kind of a in an iPad kind of size thing, but it's still just a little small. I actually like seeing the art, you know, really big, and there's something about the paper and the kind of visceral feel to it, especially for like the really kind of onesie twosie comics. If you're reading like a whole like set of them, like a really big graphic novel, like say, The Walking Dead, I like reading those in the full size kind of format if I can. So I know for the compendium of Walking Dead, but they make trade paperbacks of every like six or so, and those are a slightly larger format than the regular kind of comic book format size, and that's just really nice because, you know, the art's really big and everything. I'm not sure if they scan them at a high enough resolution that you can really zoom in on a comic book, but I'd be willing to look at it, but I still prefer physical media for that. But an interesting kind of thing in comic books in the news recently was there's a lawyer who had to file a brief for a lawsuit, and I guess the rules of the court were such that you're restricted to like 5 pages, but whatever the topic was so complex he couldn't fit it into 5 pages. So he hired a guy to write and draw a comic that explained the, you know, the position that he was making and the situation and everything, and it all fit within five pages. And the I thought that was a really cool use of media. I mean, well done for using a non-traditional method of storytelling, I think.
Yeah, I thought the funny thing to me about that was that it was the lawsuit was about the antitrust settlement with the ebook publishers,
mm-hmm.
The whole collusion price fixing lawsuit.
Yep.
And to choose a book format to, is something that has now become an ebook as part of his brief. I thought that was quite clever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that digital stuff, man. It's gonna get you every time. Which I think rolls nicely into a crazy digital thing happening right now, which is CES, which I've avoided for the most part. I usually will read some of the news, but I used to get really excited about CES because there was just, you know, super gadgety, and I was in the market for a TV for something like 3 years, so I kept like putting it off and waiting for like the technology to come out, and I don't know, every year they come out with something different. So you know, last year was all 3D and all that kind of good stuff.
Whoa, good stuff. All that stuff.
Yeah. I think we've hit it on the podcast before. 3D Not a thing. Right.
This year, they did release something that I definitely think should be a thing, and that I believe we've talked about before, which is a 4K OLED TV. I want one.
Yeah. OLEDs are pretty cool. I think the whole, just the idea of them is cool, and then the execution of them is cool. I feel like the price is probably too high still, but yeah. Anything that can generate, you know, light with, you know, very, very little power with that kind of fidelity, it's getting ever closer to that, you know, e-paper kind of thing. You know, the e-ink is nice that we were talking about earlier, but something that, you know, has just the right amount of brightness but with like very little drain on batteries, which technology apparently still has not really moved on, would be great.
Well, they did release the paper tab.
Oh, I don't know this. What is this?
It's a 10-something inch tablet that's bendable. Like, it's paper thin, bendable tablet.
Oh, maybe I will look at some news.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
Okay. I did see one bit of news saying that there are finally some prototypes of the Steam Box, which we talked about a few weeks ago. And that would be nice. I don't think it looks like anything. I mean, it frankly does not matter what it looks like. It's going to go into you know, into an entertainment center kind of in the back and just silently download all the good games that I'm itching to play. But, you know, the idea of it, I think, is great.
It's like a gaming Kindle.
I do like that. That's probably as close as you can get. Yeah.
Well, the thing I like about CES is you get to see all this new technology. It's really exciting, and all you have to think is, in 10 years, I'll be able to afford to buy this.
Yeah,
it's like scouting for Major League Baseball.
Right.
Like, oh, this is in the minors.
Yeah.
This guy is going to be a good prospect.
Yeah, every year I'm fascinated by how much thinner and bigger TVs get. Every single year, it's fascinating. Like, I just walked through Fry's yesterday. It's probably the first time I've been in Fry's in like 8 months because I've been kind of reasonably good with kind of internet purchasing for the most part, or purchasing at other stores. And I walked into Fry's and walked past like the TV that they have out for video games, and was just blown away at how thin, you know, the TV was. And it was a 60-inch TV. I don't know how they get away with that, but everything I've seen from CES was like, yeah, they're thinner than that. They're thinner than whatever I saw, you know, and they have no bezel and all that kind of good stuff. I do want the TV that I can hang just kind of on the wall like a picture and move it around. Yeah. That would be cool.
Just nail it right into the wall. Yeah, right. No, don't.
Right. That when the TVs are that disposable that I can just do that, I might have to.
Have to do that?
Yeah. So maybe not 10 years. Maybe I'm looking at 20 years for that one.
That sounds crazy, Alan. That's crazy talk. Are you a crazy person?
I don't think so. There was a book excerpt that I found online yesterday called The Wisdom of Psychopaths. And I remember seeing the book at a physical bookstore, which unfortunately is now gone. So I don't know if you know, but the Barnes & Noble in the Prune Yard in Campbell, local references, is closed. It closed on the 31st.
What the hell?
We walked in there because my sister's birthday is the 30th. We walked in there like a couple days before that to just buy her a book to go with her gift. And they're like, all the shelves were like bare. They were selling fixtures and stuff. And it says, after, you know, 12 years at this location, we're closing it up. And I'm like, oh.
So did she get a nice shelf set?
We got her a point of sale terminal.
Nice.
Yeah. But
a POS?
Yeah. Well
you
done.
Got
well
a POS done. For your birthday? That's bad. Bad, so bad brother.
We I was just surprised because I guess even the big box bookstores are feeling the hurt nowadays, you know.
Well, for a while Borders doesn't exist, yeah. So
yeah. For a while it was you know, Borders and Barnes & Noble, they were going to kill the small bookstores. Now it seems like some of those small bookstores are doing okay. I think I'm still a big fan of Kepler's Books in Palo Alto and Books Incorporated or Books Inc., which I think is just in Mountain View, but it might be in a couple other places. And I just saw another local bookstore in Sunnyvale on Murphy. Local references.
I'm not local anymore, Alan. these references don't relate to me. I feel. Ugh.
We're gonna get a lot of angry comments on the podcast this week. We'll see. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the movement towards digital publishing, the ease of consuming books, is probably doing a lot for that. I mean, I know Barnes & Noble they tried to have their own e-reader, the Nook, which sounds interesting. I think it was based on the Android, if I'm remembering correctly. So,
it's the book, but not.
Yeah, the way Nook. That I'd heard about. You know, I just noticed that. Well done. I really hope that's not how they were marketing it, but
oh, I hope it is. That's gloriously terrible. Maybe I'm crazy though. I don't know.
No, but anyway, okay. We were talking about The Wisdom of Psychopaths, and the book is essentially about how there are a lot of notable psychopaths over the course of history, and not all were like kind of violent and bad. the psychopathic tendencies, there are good kinds of aspects of those things. And you know, for the people that are labeled psychopaths, they're just taken to the extreme, essentially. They it talks a little bit about a psychopath test, which I found one online that Brendan and I took. And I wish I could show you the ridiculousness of the scoring system on this test.
Just the fact that I figured out the key, I think, proves that I am not a psychopath. Or does it prove I am a psychopath, that I could figure that out? It is stupid.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the scoring was supposed to do, but it gives you your score over, I think it's 10 dimensions, and each of those dimensions is a two-letter code, and you're either one of them or the other. And so the combinations that you get of those determine if you are psychopathic or not, or at least have some tendency to, because it's only a 51-question test, so I don't think it's very comprehensive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would probably at least put you in the ballpark.
And they do say that. It's an indicating test, not a diagnosis test.
Right. But what was ridiculous about it was it gives you either this two-letter code or another two-letter code, and they're not obvious what all these things stand for. And so you just see this like string of letters that's like SRNOPPQ, you know, and it's like, I don't know what that means. And the way that they describe the categories is, instead of saying, you know, these are what all these things mean, it says, if you have this one, or this one, then you might be a psychopath. And it's like, what are all these? I don't know how to. Yeah, not well written for scoring. But at the same time, the questions I think were really
easy.
Blunt. like, you know, one of the questions is, do you care about other people? It's like,
do you like to torture animals?
Yeah, right. And I guess if you were an actual psychopath, you would choose yes on those without agonizing over it a little bit. I think, you know, that's part of the thing that would make a person a psychopath, is that kind of self-analysis is gone. But at the same time, I think anyone willing to kind of take a test is probably somewhat concerned about their, you know, own self-analysis, and would probably not score themselves in such a, you know, obvious way, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you know, we both ended up with no red flags, as far as we know.
Right.
But there were items that showed up on both our tests that are not in the scoring key. So those could be items.
It could be.
That stand for something that we might have an issue.
It reminds me of, really, of any of those personality tests that are out there, but especially the Myers-Briggs ones, which I really enjoy.
But that's like four letters.
Yeah.
This had 20 letters.
Right. I think every time I have the opportunity to take a Myers-Briggs test, I do it.
It's just... Your Tyrion Lannister test?
Yeah. Oh, we have to link that for sure.
I think we already did that in an episode.
Oh, did we? Okay.
I think we did.
Well, maybe I'll link it again. It'll be okay. The Myers-Briggs stuff is really funny. There was another set of tests that I remember reading. I don't remember the name, but I thought it was interesting, because most of the personality tests, and really this psychopath test one included, you can kind of tell like where they're going with some of the questions. If you've seen them enough, it's like, whoa, well, if I answer this one, then I'm going to be X or whatever. The one that I'd seen that my wife actually took was really interesting, because not only did it tell you where you fell kind of personality-wise or communication style-wise, it had a section, and the fascinating thing for me is how they determine this piece of it, which is it tells you that you have a tendency to go in one of these directions when you're under stress. Which I think is a really interesting measure of it, because and I can totally see it, right? Like in a normal situation, you may act like X, Y, and Z, but then under a stressful situation, certain things are going to shut down, and that's just like how people are. And you may change, or your reactions are going to change based on, you know, if you're under time pressure or, you know, social pressure or whatever. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it, especially because it was taken in the context of work. So, you know, if you know that a person under stress, you know, blows off assignments or whatever, you might want to reevaluate when you're, you know, working with that person for the work style you would apply to that person, which I thought was, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, if you're worried about someone and how they'd react under pressure, you might start telecommuting. Maybe meet in different locations and communicate from a distance.
Yeah.
Is there something you're trying to tell me, Alan?
Oh, I love podcasting. Let me tell you, I do love it. But I really like the premise of the book. You know, it kind of highlights in the excerpt that I found. It just highlights kind of three kind of aspects of someone who's, you know, who's diagnosed as psychopathic, and it tends to always be they have like a ridiculous amount of focus, ruthlessness, but also kind of a charm that kind of comes out of nowhere. And I find that kind of fascinating, and it reminded me of a different a conversation that was on actually the Nerdist podcast with, I want to say it was Penn Jillette, where he Penn was saying that if you've ever met those people that are like way too beautiful or way too successful, almost always they're psychopathic. And I thought it paralleled really well with this book, and it clicked in my head, because these are the people that like they show up and you want to impress them even though you have absolutely no reason to, because they're successful, they're popular, they have, you know, whatever
they want,
but you know, you feel the need to like, you know, impress them. And I've and they know that and will be dismissive of you, and that's their kind of psychopathic nature that kind of comes with that. And I and that dismissal like makes you want to impress them more, and I don't know what that is, but I've definitely felt that. It's just that it's like this weird balance of kind of charisma and crazy that that is in some people.
You need to get me some of that.
Yeah, me too. So that's one that's on my list to read this year. Again, nonfiction.
I thought you were going to say that was on your to-do list. I'm going to become more charismatic and crazy this year.
Start listening to 80s music and really be into how my business cards look and stuff like that.
Just work out and do tons of coke.
Yes. I'll do my best.
You may not accomplish your goal, but you'll think you've accomplished your goal.
Everybody wins.
Yeah.
Or something.
America.
Oh. Yeah. America's doing okay. I think it's gonna be okay. Did you hear about the way we're gonna solve the debt crisis?
No, what did they pull out of their asses this time?
So the thing that I heard was that you know, America's going to run into the debt ceiling, which is a thing that it's a essentially artificial cap that Congress has in place to say that, you know, the U.S. is not going to
pay its obligations.
No, it says it's not going to exceed this much in deficit spending, and we're apparently coming up to that magic number. Or rather, we've already surpassed it. That was what the fiscal cliff was. Anyway, the thing that I read was that because that cap is imposed by Congress, there's no reason that Congress can't just increase that cap. Except
they've already done
that. Yeah, except that the major like House Republicans are saying, you know, we have to cut spending before we increase the cap. So, you know, we're not going to increase the cap. We're going to go over the fiscal cliff, blah, 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 blah. So one of the proposals that I'd seen was that apparently the U.S. has, you know, has the ability to print money whenever it wants, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So printing money is, I mean, will all be will devalue the currency that's already out there. That's just, you know, deflation or some economic term that I don't understand. But the a loophole to this is that you can mint commemorative coins in any denomination. And so I a plan that apparently is being seriously considered is to mint a coin that wipes out the deficit or the debt rather, and then deposit it in the bank essentially. And then because of this, it won't, because it's not tradable, because it's a like $1 trillion coin or whatever. It's not it won't in theory devalue the regular money that's out in the world, and so it gets around the debt ceiling.
So when I said what did they pull out of their asses this time, what I should have said was what did they pull out of their ear? It was a coin.
You know, the everyone's favorite uncle, Vice President Joe Biden, just kind of pulls it out from behind, like, you know, Timothy Geithner's ear or whatever, and
and everything's great. I say not a thing.
I think as a method for fixing, you know, the deadlock over the debt ceiling, I think it's a very interesting measure as a way of actually fixing the actual problem. Probably not the best route.
Oh, although that would create the greatest heist movie ever.
Yes, wouldn't it?
And you just gotta steal one coin.
Right. Right.
That you can never... Oh, wait, you can't spend it. That'd be hard to fence.
No, but that would be the thing at the end. It's like, you know, we got it, but we can't do anything with it, right? It's like the it's like the Ark of the Covenant, you know, the end of Indiana Jones, right?
Which is essentially what they want to do with that coin.
Right. It's
that's
beautiful.
Crazy.
It's like they worked with Hollywood to make this idea.
I think they failed that test. That we passed.
Yes.
We think.
I hope so.
At this point, I don't care if I passed. I'm happy.
Yeah, I think this has been a good show. Well done. We're looking at a couple different topics for some shows in the future. We won't reveal them all yet, and I'm hoping to have a guest in the next maybe 3 weeks. It would be good.
I agree.
Keep that kind of guest thing going, and keep everyone listening. Thanks everyone for listening to Not a Thing Podcast. Thanks for retweeting and Facebooking and Google Plusing and all those other things that people are doing on the old social media.
Do people Google Plus stuff?
I do.
Is that a thing?
It actually may not be, I'm glad it's out there. It's good. You know, remember, if you're graphically inclined at all, feel free to send us a logo for the Not a Thing Podcast.
Or even if you're graphically challenged, I would be entertained to see what you do. I won't necessarily say we'll use it, but I will get a chuckle.
Good entertainment value. Entertainment value is still a thing at the Not a Thing Podcast.
We give credit for trying. There are medals for participation. This does not obligate a Not a Thing Podcast to produce any actual medals.
All rights reserved. I don't know any of those other terms anymore. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know if you have any other final thoughts for this week, Brennan?
Pancakes. That's all that comes to my mind.
Pancakes. Oh, so we didn't talk about it, and now it's like the end of the podcast, and it's really late. But the thing that I'm doing this month is called the Whole 30 Challenge. It's a thing on whole9life.org, I think, or it's whole9life.com. You're internet people. You can figure it out. But it's a paleo diet, and I already kind of work on a very paleo/primal diet. But this one is meant to be like a jump start. So it's 30 days of, you know, eating mostly vegetables and meats, but it absolutely cuts out dairy and alcohol as being, you know, so it's trying to be as like as uber paleo as you can get. So you can't do like substitute meals with like fake meats or anything like that. So it's all, it's very, very strict paleo, for 30 days, and it's day 7 of it for me. And I am not going to lie, I am missing the booze just a little bit.
Well, then I won't bring up the delicious glass of bullet bourbon I had last night. And then I will probably have again tonight.
Oh, fabulous. I hope you're using the Glencairn glass for that.
Of course.
Excellent. Excellent.
I'm drinking for two now. I got to keep up this podcast drinking quota. We are a Scotch-based podcast, and I am not a whiskey-based podcast.
Yes.
And yes, I'm not going to let our mission fail.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. So I think that's a good spot to pull the plug on this one. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next week, Brendan.
Bye.